Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Brokenomics episode 4, where today we're going to be looking at debt and deficit with a case study of the UK. So we've covered a lot of the fundamentals. We've covered inflation, we've covered interest rates, but this is the real kicker. This is what's really bringing down the Western economies at the moment, is their penchant for overspending. And we can look at the scale of where it's got to today. Now, whenever you're discussing national finances, it's very difficult to do because you're presented with a set of numbers and they're basically fairly meaningless. I like things at the human scale. Obviously, my background, as I've talked about before, is in venture capital. Now, typically, when you're doing that, you're dealing with relatively small businesses. Quite often, you know, they'll still be at one location, one office or one factory, one relatively small team and a relatively small workforce. You can really kind of get in there and get a grip of what it is that you're working with. You just can't do that when you're looking at the macro scale of economies, departmental spending, and the scale of the deficit we've got today. But what you can do is you can take those national numbers and you can bring them back to the human scale by looking at what the population, the economically active population of their country is. And that's what we're going to be doing today. So this is basically stemming from a series of tweets that I put out a while ago, which was looking at a fantastic website, which is called the US Debt Clock. And what that website does is it basically takes the entire amount of US debt and it shows you that split down on an individual level, on a taxpayer type level. So this is basically the scale of the problem that the world's biggest debtor has at the moment, that the US has a national debt at this point of $31 trillion. It's an extraordinary amount. If you divide that by the individuals in that country, each US citizen, if you were to divide it between them, has a national debt of about $94,000. That's enough to buy everybody in the US a Porsche 911, if you were to split it up that way. And actually, if you were to split it down across those who are taxpayers in the US, it's $250,000 per taxpayer. Actually, the amount of debt is enough that if you were to benefit just those in Texas, you could give everybody in Texas $1 million, including all of the children. So it's a vast amount of money that they've accumulated. But I'm just talking there about the national debt. So if you add on the state and local debt, if you add on personal corporate bank debt, and most importantly of all, the unfunded liabilities. So these are things like Social Security and Medicare. You get to a debt that is well over 200 trillion. In fact, I believe it's in the mid 200 trillion level. Now, that amount of debt is enough to give everybody, every adult in the US, $1 million if you didn't have that debt level. So when you bring it back to the human scale, you can see the scale of indebtedness that Western countries have got to is quite remarkable. So that was a thread out I put a while ago, and that proved very popular. But this is a UK-based show, and we want to look at UK-based finances. So let's do a deep dive on the UK and understand what the level of debt is and actually propose what are some solutions that we can draw from this. So take a look at this table. This is UK government finances over the last few years, and these are numbers that I've taken from UK budgets. Now, don't get concerned if these numbers don't mean anything to you, because quite frankly, they don't mean anything to me either. I mean, we can see that the numbers are considerable. We can see that, you know, on a very light touch, of course, spending exceeds revenues at every point. But I don't think I have an intuitive sense of what a billion is. I think I understand what £1,000 is, and I think I understand even what £1 million is, because, you know, £1 million, that's, well, it's twice or three times or four times the value of your house. It's possibly, if you do really well, what you might have in your pension if you're a professional person and you save up diligently across your career. So we've got a kind of an intuitive sense of what a million is, but a billion is very difficult to wrap your head around. So what I want to do is I want to take these numbers and I want to divide them by the number of people in the UK, which is 67 million. And actually, no, I don't. I want to go one step further. I want to divide it by the number of economically active people. The reason I want to do that is because when it comes to the wealth of a nation, ultimately it comes back to those economically active people. Now, this isn't to say that the economically active people includes everybody who, say, paying taxes, because, you know, even your children, if you give them pocket money, they're going to be paying VAT every time they buy something from a shop. And of course, retired people are going to be paying a, you know, whole range of taxes. You know, they'll be paying the council tax and fuel duty and VAT and a whole bunch of other ones. But nevertheless, all of the economic activity comes from those economically active people. Even if they have subsequently retired, they're going to be money that they accumulated while they were working. And the other criticism that people might make of this is that you're ignoring corporations. Well, corporations are made up of people. They are owned by people and they are run by people, and the proceeds from them ultimately go back to people. So I think it is entirely legitimate to split up these numbers by the 33 million people who are economically active in the country and see what that tells us. So take a look at this table. This is looking at government spending broken down per economically active person. Look at these numbers. The government is collecting £25,000 for every economically active person in the country, and it is spending £32,000 per one of these people. So straight off, look, you can see the deficit that they're operating on. So effectively, for every economically active person, the government is running up credit card debt every year of £7,000. And remember, this is brought back to the human scale. So the government, on your behalf, if you are a working person, if you are contributing to the economy in any way, the government on your behalf is running up a credit card debt of £7,000 a year. And the national debt divided across all of these economically active people is 67 grand. That's the UK share of debt that you're responsible for. Now, let's be clear. You might look at that 67 grand number and think that, well, maybe it's not too bad because I've got a mortgage and my mortgage is much bigger than that number. That's not the right comparison, because your mortgage has an asset against it, your home. If you ever wanted to, you could sell that home and you could clear the mortgage. And quite possibly, if you've had it for a number of years, you could then go and buy yourself a flat or a bungalow or something. You'd still have something left over and you could wipe out the debt. There is no corresponding asset that goes along with this debt. The way to think of this debt level is credit card debt that has been accumulated. So it shows you the real mess that the finances are in. Just bear in mind that the average salary in the UK is 38,000 at the moment. So from that level, that baseline of about 38, the government is spending 32. Clearly, this is quite unsustainable. Now, compare it to this. This is basically the same table, but instead now I'm looking at the year 2000. Now, the numbers are lower because, of course, there was less inflation. See the previous but one video, which we covered that. But it goes to show that it is actually possible for government to function sensibly. So here, the average revenue that the government was collecting per worker was 13,500, and the average spending was also 13,500. There was no deficit back in the year 2000. And there was a national debt, which wasn't being added to, but that was 14,000 per person. And bear in mind, we're taking this back to the human scale. So you can think about it like this. If you knew somebody back in 2000 who was earning, the average salary at the time was just shy of 20,000. If you knew somebody was earning 20,000 and they had a credit card debt of 14,000, you'd be saying to them, look, mate, you've got a bit of a problem, but, well, you're not adding to it. So, you know, you can sort this out. You can turn this around. And that was really the junction point that we were in back in the year 2000. We had a bit of debt, but the finances were basically good. We could have sorted it out back then. We could have taken the turn and got that national debt paid down. Instead, we went dramatically, quite dramatically in the opposite direction, and spending started to rise and outstrip revenues every year going forward from that point. So, and look, the other reason I wanted to show 2000 is because I remember the year 2000, and it was fine. I mean, we had roads, we had hospitals, we had emergency services. I mean, the lights stayed on. I mean, everything was fine back in the year 2000. So clearly we do not need the scale of government that it has grown to over this period. Now, you know, what's driving this? What's behind it? Well, if you've watched the previous videos, we've got some explanations for that. We know that the inflation effects, effectively money gets created at the nexus between government and the finance sector. So those two have ballooned out of all proportion. Other explanations, which are very much worth mentioning, is, of course, we've had net immigration of at least 5 million since then, or at least those are the official numbers. We don't know what the actual number of immigration since the year 2000 has been, but the official numbers are at least 5 million. And if you're on the left, you might say that corporations have become greedier since then. I don't know if I believe that explanation, but those are the range of explanations as to why we've got ourselves into the mess that we have. So, again, let's break this down to the human level. Why have we got into such a problem? How have we managed to get to this point? And it's worth taking note of just how voracious the government has come with its appetites, how much tax it's taking off you. And bear in mind, the amount of tax it's taking off you, it's still spending well beyond that. But let's say you you bump into a mate you haven't seen for a few years. And this mate of yours, he's earning £50,000 a year. Now, I think you'd say that is a perfectly reasonable salary. That's a good salary for a man to be making. Let's split out the sort of tax obligation that falls on a chap like that. So first thing to bear in mind, and I'll throw this up on screen, is before this chap has even been paid a penny, the corporate entity that he works for has been taxed quite heavily already. So that corporate entity would have paid VAT, it would have paid corporation tax, it would have paid employers' national insurance, it would have paid quite possibly a lot of fuel duties and other taxes as well. Then, of course, when it hits the pay packet, 12.5K comes out in terms of PAYE and national insurance. So straight away, our friend is left with 38,000. Then, of course, he's got other taxes to pay, depending on where in the country he lives, but he's likely to have a council tax bill of around £2,000. He's likely to have fuel duty to pay if he's an average commuter of another grand. Depends on how much he spends, but he's probably looking at additional £4,000 in VAT. Would be higher still if he's a drinker and a smoker quite heavily as well. And then other taxes, they typically come to about £2,000 for this bracket of individual. So he's left with £29,000 at this point. Now, I would want to go further and say that I consider inflation effectively to be a tax. We covered this in one of the previous videos. Inflation is effectively how government finances itself, by creating additional money which devalues the money that you have and the money that you get paid. So I want to treat that as a tax as well. And we know that the official inflation rate is 10% at the moment. So I'm going to take off another 5K of tax from this character as well. And we're now down to 24,000 from a 50 grand salary, and the only thing that this individual has purchased at this point is their government. Now, from that point, then you actually need to spend something. You need to pay your mortgage. You need to feed and clothe yourself and your children. And of course, the other thing is that you need to save for retirement so that you can pay half of these taxes all over again after you've already paid taxes on them the first time that you got them. So it is quite clear from this that somebody on 50 grand these days, I'm not going to say that they're a rich individual. I think that is a fairly mainstream salary at this point, and yet more than half of it is going to the government before a single penny gets spent on yourself. So this is the scale that the government is now taking money off people. And as we've already pointed out, the government is spending well beyond what they collect in taxes as well. So what's the spending problem? Take a look at this. So this is a table with public spending in it. This is the whole government effectively summarised. There's a few lines that I have to leave off, but I mean it totals up correctly. So total government spending at this point is about 1.1 trillion. And you can look at the big items in there. So of course the biggest item of expenditure in this country, it is the National Health Service, which is, you know, a bit over 20% of the total. So we're spending about 211 billion on the NHS. Pensions is the next big item at 180. Then social security, so that's all the other forms of welfare. Education is in at 100, and then it starts to tail off quite quickly after that. So defence is about 6%. State protection, so that includes courts and police, for about 4%, and then various other items. I've added at the bottom there the debt interest. So all of these numbers are from last year's budget, with the exception of the debt interest. I've used the current debt interest number. And as you can see, that is up at this point, 120 billion just to service the existing debt. So that's a substantial number by itself. But then I'm going to tell you that this table includes total spend, which incorporates a lot of accounting entries, non-cash items, things like depreciation. And so that those numbers there, they're not actually the departmental spend. It's not what those departments actually get to push out the door. If you subtract those accounting entries, for example, the National Health Service, their departmental budget is 144 billion. So when you're looking at a debt interest of 120 trillion, that's actually the second largest item that our government is spending money on at this point. And actually, if we continue on the rate that we are, and all indications tend to suggest that we will, it's not going to be very long at all until debt interest is the largest item that your government is spending on, larger even than the hallowed NHS. So we know that we're in a mess. The government is overspending. It's clearly unsustainable to carry on at this level. You cannot have any individual organization or even government indefinitely spend more than they earn. And you can see that the system is really starting to creak. Things are starting to break. People are starting to suffer. We're having energy crises. We're having people feeling squeezed, even if they're earning a fairly good salary. So we need to find a solution for this. But the problem is none of the solutions are anywhere near politically viable. And I'm going to talk through four of them here. And you can kind of see the point that I'm making. So I'll throw this up on the screen. These are the kind of options that you might get presented to you, not just by the man in the pub, but prominent online economists will also talk about a lot of these. Default on the national debt, cut spending, tax the rich, and raise growth. None of these are viable. Let's explain why. So first of all, default on the debt. This one might be superficially attractive, especially to the younger members of the audience, because, of course, that debt has been accumulated and, you know, how on earth did you ever think that you were going to get paid back on it? So effectively, what we'd be saying is we go to the bondholders, the gilt holders, who have accumulated all of this government debt, and we just say, sorry, sucks to be you, but we are not paying it. We're defaulting on it. We're doing an Argentina, effectively. You're not getting your money back. Now, unfortunately, we would still, even if you wipe out that 120 billion of debt financing, even if you wiped out the debt, we would still be running a deficit of 146 billion, even after wiping that out. And that breaks down to $4,500 per economically active person every year that would be getting added to the credit card bill. So what it means is, even if you wiped out the debt today, we would still be back at this level of debt in 15 years. Because the problem is the government overspending, not just the debt itself. But it gets worse than that, because let's say you do wipe out that debt. Well, congratulations, you've just wiped out the pension industry, because most of their savings are in government gilt. And not only that, you've wiped out the savings and investments of a huge swath of people, which is why they say that superficially this one might be more attractive to the younger viewers. But actually, it's worse than that still, because since 2008, and we talked about this in the introduction video, is banks came under severe stress. And effectively what happened is the risk was moved from the banking sector up to the sovereign level. And it is now the case that sovereign debt is used as the collateral for the rest of the financial system. So banks and institutions will hold government debt, and that is the basically the collateral from which they can then go off and do everything else. So if you wipe out the sovereign debt layer, you basically collapse the financial system. And it would trigger a domino effect across the Western world. So you may remember back in 2008, there was a lot of fuss about stopping little Greece from defaulting on their debt. They were very tempted, having got in over their heads, just to do the Argentina thing, but doing it within the Eurozone, within the Western financial system, where they just wiped out the debt. But the concern was that that would then trigger an effect on Spain, Italy, and that would then filter through onto France and eventually Germany, and it would domino down the system. So that was stopped. Now, suddenly a country the size of the UK, if we defaulted on our sovereign debt, that would knock out the Western financial system, because there would be this domino effect of debt collapsing, which we've talked about in previous videos, in the inflation video and the introduction video. If you collapse the financial system, because money is half of all the transactions, you also then collapse all supply chains, fiat money goes, you get systemic collapse. There is no longer an incentive for farms to provide food to the wholesalers. There's no incentive for the wholesalers to provide that on to shops. Indeed, nobody is getting diesel anyway, because you can't pay for it. There's no incentive for the refiners to pass on, because nobody is getting paid for anything. So you have complete supply chain collapse and famine. You don't want that, as tempting as it might be. So this is why this option never even ever gets mentioned in mainstream sources. I'm including it in here because it is perhaps an option, but this is a no-go. You cannot do this until you have a alternative monetary system ready to go, which at the moment we don't. Potentially with time we could look at setting up a return to the gold standard or possibly even Bitcoin, and that's something I'm going to be talking about in a future video soon, but we don't have that ready to go, and therefore this is not an option. This is not something that you want to go for even on a short-term basis.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.